thank you very much for downloading the podcast. My guests were Robert Sean Leonard and Imelda Staunton. Well, I'm very pleased indeed to say that my guest this afternoon on the Culture Club is the very talented actress Imelda Staunton, who's currently taking the West End by storm. I'm sorry, that's a terrible cliche, but it's true, in Gypsy, playing the fantastic role of Mama Rose. And it is a huge, extraordinary role. In fact, I saw it somewhere as being compared to King Lear, the King Lear of the musical theatre world. And I wondered, what were your thoughts when you were offered the role?
Oh, dear, is what I thought. It was marvellous. Of course, Stephen Sondheim said, you have to do this part. And I did say, oh, really? And because I was just started Sweeney Todd.
Yes.
And, you know, I like a bit of a challenge. So, but it's been a long time coming, in a way, because, you know, that was 2011 when we had that conversation. And so it's now 2015, so it's been a long time coming.
Well, she's certainly a challenge. I mean, she does come across in many ways as monstrous, but she's not two-dimensional. You're very clever, I think, in bringing out the subtleties and the vulnerabilities. There's light and shade there. You know, she's not a black-and-white character.
Well, none of us are.
Absolutely.
You know, and true. I think, you have to remember, A, it's a true story, and here is a woman who... This is the Depression in the 30s in America, and... She wants to get her kids out and she wants them to have a life. And you could argue, I mean, I don't think her methods are particularly to be recommended, but, you know, both her daughters, Gypsy Rose Lee, became the most famous striptease artist in the world, and June Havoc became a Hollywood film star. So she did it.
And they were successful.
Yeah.
As you say, I suppose you can question her methods, certainly. Mm. It strikes me that it's an incredibly physically demanding role. I'm interested in how you spend the day before you do a performance. Do you have to deliberately conserve your energy so that all that energy can be put into the performance in the evening or the matinee?
I sort of do, I have to say. My life... we're about 3 months into the show now, and... Yeah, I really do. I'm pretty boring, I have to say. I have to rest. I don't go out at night, obviously, after the show, ever. I have a massage on my larynx every Wednesday before the matinee.
Oh, that's interesting.
I have acupuncture. I have massage. I've got to keep my body and my throat.
And your throat, and my, certainly.
You know, in tip-top condition.
Yes.
And I went to the wonderful Mark Malan, who taught me how to sing, really. I mean, I could always sing, but he certainly absolutely extended my range. And I have exercises that I do during the day, before the show, in the interval, and in the car on the way home. Cool down, warm-ups, you know, resets, you name it. I'm doing it all. I'm throwing everything at it. Because I also knew, unlike Sweeney, this is a much bigger sing. And yet there are sweet songs as well, and they need as much work as the big stuff. So I worked very hard and I went for lessons 6 months before we started rehearsing. Mm. And, you know, once I set my mind on something, you know, and I did exercises every day for 6 months, so I got my vocal quality.
I mean, you're really like an Olympic athlete in that respect.
I'm glad this is radio.
But you're in the way that you're approaching it and training for it, in a sense, and doing special exercises. And this vocal massage sounds fascinating, actually. Does it
Well, your larynx sort of... No, it's gorgeous.
It actually really helps.
Yeah, it does. Because your larynx sort of... I don't know what it does. It rises because I finished the show on a very, very high place and my larynx goes up there and it has to be sort of...
Brought down again.
You know, told to... I suppose it's like a muscle that is sort of, and I suppose, overworked.
Yes,
every night, because it ain't just the songs; it's the talking in between.
Of course. Yes.
And you know, she's not a quiet woman, and so it's been, you know, from the moment it starts, she never stops talking or singing.
Well, Imelda, let's give your voice a break now with a charming waltz by Chopin here on Classic FM. the delightful waltz in F minor, number 2 by Chopin. The pianist was Ingrid Fleeter on Classic FM. Well, I'm Charlotte Green, and I'm really pleased that Imelda Staunton is my guest this afternoon on The Culture Club. Imelda, I'd like to talk about your film work, and in particular your work with Mike Leigh on Vera Drake, which had a huge impact on me. I was moved to tears by that, and that doesn't actually happen to me very often in the cinema. Maybe I'm getting a bit cynical in my old age, but I found it deeply moving. I thought it was a tremendous performance. And I've been lucky enough to have Leslie Manville and Timothy Spall on this show, and they both have sung his praises and said how liberating and creative it is to work with him. And I imagine you'd say the same.
Right, exactly the same. And you know, Leslie and Tim have done far more than I. So when I came to work with them, I was a clean slate, and so I had no idea what it was. So absolutely the most liberating experience I've ever had. And you know, at the drop of a hat, I would do it again.
Of course. Yes, yes.
Well, I did his second one another year, but I was doing Cranford at the same time, so I could only do a small bit on that. And I was, in a way, I was rather glad, because that character in another year was quite depressed. And whereas Vera Drake, she was a very, you know, they were a very functional family.
Yes,
they weren't dysfunctional. He often deals with dysfunction. And
but in fact, they were a very tight, happy unit, weren't they?
Yeah. So that wasn't any hardship at all. So, yes, it was the most extraordinary experience. And, you know, I envy Leslie all those films and Tim that they've done with
him. And, of course, Pride. Again, you were playing a real-life character. And she was an activist, wasn't she? A political activist who played a huge role in the miners' strike.
Well, she was the head of the women's, you know.
Did you meet her?
Unfortunately not. She had been in a nursing home for a while. And actually, she passed away on our first day of filming.
Oh.
And I actually took that as a rather good sign. I thought she was passing on the baton.
Yes.
And saying, this town isn't big enough for the two of us, so take it over. So I thought, right, I'm going to run with that. I'm going to do that for you. Yeah. And that was a wonderful piece of work to be involved with.
It was a very good film, I thought. And, of course, a great cast as well. I mean, that must have been fun.
Yes, it was, actually. And we were a lovely disparate group who got on tremendously
well. And I think that came across, actually, in the film itself.
Well, it does. I think if you're lucky enough to get a good cast, but nothing beats the script. You can cast it up to the hilt. If the script ain't good, it ain't good.
It's not going to work.
No.
Yeah.
So we knew we had a great script, and Stephen Beresford wrote this beautiful script. And Matthew Warchus, who we all adore, who's now, thank goodness, running the old Vic.
Yes, which is great news.
Yes. We sort of thought, well, I think we're on a winning ticket here, just for the piece and for the story. And, you know, people needed to be reminded about that time.
Yes, of course, yes. Imelda, look, there's lots more to talk about, and I'd love to return to your stage work. But before that, here on Classic FM, music by Vivaldi. The second movement of the Guitar Concerto in D Major by Vivaldi. The soloists were the Cotona twins with the Carducci Quartet. The conductor was Heroen von Keulen. I'm Charlotte Green, and my guest this afternoon on The Culture Club is the actress Imelda Staunton. Now, I first saw you as Miss Adelaide in Guys and Dolls at the National Theatre, which I was blown over by. I went to see it about 5 or 6 times, I think. I thought it was tremendous. And you were incredibly funny, and I always think of you as a very, very talented comic actress. And again, thinking of your performance in Cranford, which I thought was hilarious, absolutely wonderful. And you, again, very few people really make me throw my head back and have a huge guffaw and really roar with laughter, but you do. Is it instinctive? Were you always like that as a child?
Yes, I suppose I was. Yeah.
I mean, presumably you can't learn that, can you?
I don't think so.
No,
you know, Tim Spall, the funniest man on earth. You know, so, I mean, I think you're like that or you're not. And both my parents were quite funny. My parents are Irish, and, you know, the Irish have plenty of crack, you know.
Of course.
And,
yes.
And I like funny people. I'm attracted to that as well. Yes, I think humour is a very attractive quality.
I couldn't agree more. Mm. In fact, I don't think I could get on with someone if they didn't have a good sense of humour. I think it would be quite hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm attractive. I'm just saying I find it attractive. That's all.
Mm-hmm. And what about comic timing? Again, presumably that's instinctive,
yeah,
isn't it?
No.
Because some people really have it and others manifestly don't.
Yes, yes.
Which is a bit unfortunate for them, but...
Yes, I suppose, it's for you when you're here, listening to this wonderful music that you know there are violinists who just have it, and some who just do it rather well, and some
who
have that extra bit of something.
That's very true.
And I think with all the arts and all those jobs that we are lucky enough to have that, allow you to be in your element and to express what you are with giving it to that character.
Yes.
I think, comic timing and tragic work. I mean, Vera Drake wasn't funny, but the only thing you need with comedy and tragedy is honesty. And that's all you need. Yes, you can have comic timing on top of that, but the bottom line is, when you say to young actors, don't try and be funny. Just be honest, then it will be funny.
And then it will be funny, yes. Yeah. Yes, there's nothing worse if someone is striving too hard and desperately, and you can sense that desperation almost.
Yes, because then that's them, the actor or the player.
Yes, taking over.
Trying to be funny.
Yes.
No, let the character speak. Don't you do that. Mm.
Now, you and I think, are probably much the same age. I think we were born in the same year. And whenever I go to the theatre now, I find it quite hard to see my age group, middle-aged women, represented on stage in any really decent, meaty part that drives the action. There are people my age on stage, but they tend to be on the periphery.
Mm.
And I wonder if that's something you rail against yourself and you rather hope that people, contemporary playwrights, although I exempt David Hare because I think he writes brilliant parts for women.
Yes.
He's an honourable exception. Mm. But, there seem to be endless parts for men of that age and older.
Sort of reflecting life, isn't it, really?
Well, sadly, it is, isn't it? Unfortunately.
Thank goodness, we have got, the Queen at the moment on in the West End, an audience.
Yes.
So we've got one top-notch lady at the moment. And I think young female writers, and as you said, male writers are doing their bit.
Yes,
But of course there is. Look, you can say we're all saying it till the cows come home. Until it's written, we can't do it.
Yes, of course.
And, we are so lucky in this country to have this wonderful collection of women, of actresses who are over 25 with their own faces.
Yes.
Who manage to get up and actually go to work without a bag over their head and be accepted. So,
exactly.
Unfortunately, you've got wonderful companies like the Royal Shakespeare Company, but Shakespeare, it ain't Queen Lear.
No.
So, unless it's Gypsy, of course. I think it is being addressed, but it's
slowly, all too slowly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the classics, of course. Of course, you'll have the Medeas and Ibsen. I think we did fairly well for women.
Yes,
but we need modern playwrights. You said David Hare. We need more.
We need more like David Hare, really, I think. Well, let's hear some more music on Classic FM now. This is Voices of Spring by Strauss the Younger. Rousing ending to the waltz from Voices of Spring by Johann Strauss the Younger. The Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra was under the baton of Lauren Marzell on Classic FM. Imelda, we've just been talking about big, meaty roles for women. Is there a role, a classical role maybe, or something by Ibsen that you still haven't played and you'd love to play?
I've never been that sort of actress that's wanted to play the big, the parts that other people have played particularly. I love new writing. So no is the answer to that. I'm so pathetically unambitious in that respect because I think, someone else will play it, they'll want to do it and they'll be fine. I'm not bothered. So I have never hankered after those, I've got to play this in Shakespeare. I've got to play, as you said, the Ibsen roles. Not particularly. I mean, I would like to do Chekhov again. I haven't done Chekhov since 1988. But
is it more a case of just seeing what's around and maybe even waiting for something good to turn up?
Yeah, I didn't know I'd be doing Gypsy. I mean, yes. I thought when I finished Guys and Dolls the second time in 97, I thought, well, that's it. That's the best musical in the world. I'll never do that again. So I did, after that I did a bit of a cabaret. So I thought, well, I'm never going to be in a musical again, so I might as well do it. And I like having a sing.
Yes.
And actually, it was only... So that was it. No musicals, fine. And I'm not a great fan of musicals because I need a script. And Guys and Dolls has a wonderful script.
Yes,
and
does.
Gypsy has a wonderful script. And Gypsy, I underestimated its power. I mean, the huge advantage we have here with Gypsy is that a lot of people, it hasn't been here for 42 years and people don't know
it. And they don't
it.
Know it, do they? Exactly.
It's been done on Broadway every few years, you know. People churn it out brilliantly, but we haven't had it here.
Yes.
So, and that is a great script.
Yes. Yeah.
And Sweeney Todd, again, I didn't know that was going to happen. And that was Michael Ball very kindly said, you know, he was going to do it and would I be in it? I said, oh, yeah, OK.
So these things happen almost by accident. I mean, it's just a sort of happy accident.
I mean, I remember, I did have the LP. Does anyone know what that means? Who's listening here?
Surely you do.
Of Angela Lansbury doing Gypsy. And I don't know why I had it, but I had it.
Yes.
And I would listen to that and thought, God, that's amazing. And anyway, didn't think any more of it. But I've seen it and I saw Patti LuPone do it brilliantly. And I thought, well, I never need to do that because she's done it now and it's marvellous. But the pressure was on us, you know, to get it so right.
Absolutely right, yes, yes.
Because
they would have
taken no prisoners if we were under par, and quite right, because it deserves to be done as well as Jonathan Kent's production, I think, has done it. I'll see. As I said, I didn't know this was going to happen. So, and I didn't know that my voice could accommodate this part.
That's interesting. But you've proved to yourself that it can.
Because I sort of thought people might say, we sort of knew she could sort of act it, but you can't really sing it. I thought, right, I cannot do that. I really have to work at that.
I understand that.
Yeah. So I thought, well, I have to work so hard. And so it really paid off for me. Now, I'm not saying that anyone thinks it's great, but for me, I'm satisfied with that I'm not having to struggle. And I would have had to struggle unless I'd had those lessons.
Imelda, this has been a huge pleasure. Thank you ever so much. It's been lovely to meet you.
And thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, I'm really pleased to say that my guest this afternoon in the Culture Club is the American actor Robert Sean Leonard, who is in Britain reprising the role of Atticus Finch at the Barbican in a revival of the Regent's Park open-air theatre production To Kill a Mockingbird. Robert, if someone is coming along to the play, having never read the book, what can they expect?
It's a beautiful story. It's an incredibly surprising, creative evening. I've been involved in theatre for 30 years and I've never seen anything like it. When the director, Tim Sheeter, first approached me and discussed the project, I had no idea what he was talking about and I thought he was completely out of his mind. And after the first day of rehearsal, I thought I'd made a big mistake. But it's truly a unique, remarkable theatrical experience. At the same time, it's a very simple story about a girl in the South in the 30s and her father, who's morally obsessed lawyer in a very small southern town. It's hard to describe. It's a lovely evening.
You first played the role of Atticus in the open air in Regent's Park.
Indeed.
What are the particular challenges of acting outside, as it were, particularly with the vagaries of a British summer?
Well, there are many challenges. There are many benefits to it. We were very lucky. We only lost one performance to rain.
Well, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good, yeah. It was almost a record. We almost made it all the way with a perfect score, but we lost one show. It rained a little bit here and there throughout, and occasionally the stage manager would step on stage and say, ladies and gentlemen, we're taking a brief break, and we'd stop, and then we'd continue 10 minutes later. A couple of nights we had that problem. But I had never performed outdoors. I enjoyed it very much. There's a festive quality in the air at an event like that, when you see theater outdoors, that really helps the actors and helps the evening. It focuses the audience. It's everyone's feels like they're attending an event somewhat for some reason, just because it's outdoors. And also Mockingbird is a very, a lot of scenes take place indoors and almost the entire second act takes place indoors because it's a trial scene. But it's strangely a very natural play. There's a lot of cicadas and crickets and, you know, humid summer nights on the porch. And it, so the night in Regent's Park was a great asset.
It lends itself, doesn't it, really, to that setting. I wonder if the spectre of Gregory Peck hangs over every actor who takes on the role of Atticus Finch with that tremendous performance in the 1962 film.
I would say the spectre of Gregory Peck tackles and pummels every actor who tries to play Atticus Finch. There's nothing you can do about that. I believe to ignore it would be silly. I told that to our director the first time we talked. I told him I would most likely, maybe just out of sheer terror, I would just be imitating Gregory Peck. That would just be my, that would be my MO for the role. And that's kind of how I started, actually. I'd said, Jim, and you know, and my voice went down, and so what are you about to do, Jim? And I hit the, and a lot of why, and like aspirating the WHs. And you know what? Gregory Peck was Gregory Peck for a reason. I have found my own way into the role, and I certainly have my own personal, I find moving connections to these kids that are in the play, and those are my favorite moments in the play when I just get to work with the kids. But that said, I keep Peck in mind because he just got it right. Why deny it? He got it right. It's the right way to play the guy.
This seems a good moment to hear some music from the film score to Kill a Mockingbird. It's by Elmer Bernstein. The main title from To Kill a Mockingbird by Elmer Bernstein, and the composer was conducting the Royal Scottish National Orchestra. I'm Charlotte Green, and I'm really pleased to say that my guest this afternoon is the American actor Robert Sean Leonard. Robert, you were only 19 when you played the role of Neil in the film Dead Poets Society, which I adored when I saw it. What was that experience like, getting such a role at such a young age?
It was surprising. And life-changing, certainly career-changing. I was a theater actor. I'd been doing plays for about 5 years at that point, like these kids I'm working with now. So I was one of those theater kids. I auditioned for films. I never got them. What was wonderful about New York in the 80s when I started was that you'd go to the theater auditions and there were maybe four other guys there. You get to know them very quickly because they're
yes.
the same guys.
Yes.
And you'd all, one of you would get the one play at the Circle Rep and another one would get a play at Lincoln Center. And, you know, you all knew each other. You'd go to a film audition and there were 150 guys.
Yes.
Or a TV commercial or a TV show. Because who wants to make $4.50 a week doing a stoppered play when you're 14 years old? It's an odd kid who wants that. And that was my welcome to my youth. So I did many plays. I always auditioned for films. Revolution with Al Pacino, playing the kid. I don't know. I never saw it. I don't know. Things like that. The auditions I remember. Rooms, throngs of children in these rooms with mothers and sandwiches and hour and a half waits to go in and read for the casting director on a video camera because the director is 3,000 miles away. And Dead Poets was the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't think twice about it. I went in and auditioned and knew I wouldn't get it and didn't really care because that was the life of a New York actor. They always end up casting the guy in Los Angeles. And I got it. I still don't know how or why. And it was one of the great moving romantic times of my life. In a way, it was like college for me because I never got a degree. And I never had that away from home dorm room experience. So for me, Ethan Hawke and Jamie Waterston and Gail Hansen and all those guys that were in the film, we lived in this little hotel together for 3 months and we all had a life-changing experience.
Do you watch it now?
No.
It's something that was in your past and you don't go back to it.
Yes. I remember when I was young and I remember hearing once that Jimmy Stewart made however many films he made, I think he had not seen 50 of them.
That's interesting.
I remember thinking, no, that must be a lie. I'm sure he just snuck, you know, somewhere. And this is, of course, before DVDs or VCRs, so that also is slightly
yes.
different. But But now that I'm older, I get it. You don't. It's kind of fun to watch yourself when you're younger because you get all excited because you're in a movie. Isn't that cool? Yeah.
Yes.
At 46, it's not. All it does is make you feel uncomfortable to watch yourself. It really doesn't get you anything. I'd rather just watch an old MASH episode or something. So no, I haven't seen Dead Poets. I'm sure it stands up. It's a Peter Weir, Witness, Picnic at Hanging Rock, Mosquito Coast. All his films are remarkably good.
Wonderful pedigree. Yes.
So yeah. I'm sure it's still good. Obviously, Robin Williams, his life and the choices he made have changed. I'm sure, certainly the way the film makes me feel now is very different than it did it 2 years ago. So I don't know if that's true for the general public. But
well, let's hear Carpe Diem from Dead Poets Society by Maurice Jarre. Carpe Diem from Dead Poets Society by Maurice Jarre. And my guest on Classic FM is one of the stars from that film, the actor Robert Sean Leonard. Robert, I read somewhere that you grew up wanting to play Hamlet in Central Park, which is a great image. What is it about live theatre work that really appeals to you?
It was my first love. I remember... the reason I wanted to play Hamlet in Central Park, I should specify that it's the Delacorte Theatre. I didn't mean Central Park in general. I didn't just want to run around the park playing Hamlet. There is a theatre actually in Central Park in which Sam Waterston played Hamlet. And that was, I loved theatre. I was a little bit like a Glee kid at first. I just sort of liked the experience. I liked the magic of the audience and the lights and the applause, and it was fun. But then as I got older, I fell in love in a more mature way, I think, with the words and the experience of seeing something by Shaw or by Brian Friel or Chekhov, something that three or four times throughout the night just pings you a little bit and makes you see your life in a different way, or maybe makes you look in and look at your kids sleeping on a night you may not have if you hadn't seen this certain play that made you grateful for them, or things like that. It's not earth-shattering stuff. It's just stuff that really moved me, that drew me to it.
And is there a big, really complex, deep role that you would love to play on stage still?
I don't really have a list like that. Doing To Kill a Mockingbird right now is one of my favorite jobs I've ever taken part in. And it came out of nowhere. I never would have dreamed of playing Atticus Finch. So I don't really. I'm the worst judge of what I should do, which has caused considerable problems in my life. As my wife will tell you. But I really am. I don't know what I'd be good at. My sister said, you'll be a great Atticus Finch. And I thought, you're out of your mind. I'm the last guy who could play Atticus Finch. So I'm the worst guy to ask. I don't know what I should play.
That's interesting, because I think you're tailor-made to play the part. And critics agree. I mean, you've had some tremendous reviews.
It's certainly not interesting to me, but if you find it interesting, God bless you. I don't know. I can't explain it any further. I just know it doesn't feel... Maybe because the Atticus Finch in my mind is just... The Atticus Finch in everyone's mind can't be them, because I don't know what it is.
Harper Lee's lost novel, Go Set a Watchman, is out a week on Tuesday. Will you be reading it? Are you excited at the prospect of this book coming out?
I think it's a very, very interesting turn of events. I find the fact that it's being published every bit as interesting as the fact it exists. It seems to be something she has held strong to, holding this book in a drawer somewhere for 50 years. Yes. I'm not sure why now that has changed. So I find that very curious. But sure, I will read it. I can't imagine what it will be like. I mean, she's clearly such a gifted woman, and I there'll be gorgeous things in it, regardless of whether you like the novel overall. I just find it very curious that it's something that was so strongly held for so long suddenly just wasn't held anymore.
Robert, this has been a huge pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. It's been terrific.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sean.
And I should just add that the Regent's Park Open Air Theatre's production of To Kill a Mockingbird is at the Barbican in London until the 25th of July. And move heaven and earth to get a ticket. Well, I'm off on my summer holidays for the next 2 weeks, but Anne-Marie Minhall will be your host in the Culture Club. Next week, she's joined by the sporting legend Freddie Flintoff.